Magni huffed and went to sit in a large, soft chair. Maybe, but I still think you're being played, brother. I'm not going to let her go, I muttered, because I couldn't take the chance of losing her. Then don't. If she's a spy, they won't start a fucking war, Magni argued. And it's not like they don't need what we have, either, Boulder chipped in. The sanctions will harm both sides. He was one of the few who knew that we delivered sperm to the Motherlands, and I appreciated that he didn't blurt it out since Finn didn't know about it. Just tell her they made demands, but it's nothing to worry about, Finn suggested. It's best if you don't show her the message. Let the deadline run out and take it from there. Does this mean Kaya and the children won't be coming either? Boulder asked and sat down on the armrest of a large leather chair. Christina is going to be devastated by that news. Don't tell Christina anything until the deadline is up, I ordered and rolled my shoulders. Whatever happens, happens. Christina and Pearl are going to be pissed at us for not involving them, Boulder told me. Are you sure you want to keep them in the dark? If I don't, I'll lose her, I said, not realizing what that decision would cost me.
Chapter 20 Demands Pearl I woke up with someone tugging at my arm. Thinking it was Khan, I spread my arms in a long yawn and smiled. Psst! A low sound next to my bed made me open one eye to see Christina on her knees with a finger to her lips. Shh, she whispered, and crooked her finger for me to come closer. What's going on? I whispered. The men are having a meeting, and I eavesdropped, she whispered. The council sent a message demanding your return. I remained still, just listening to what she told me. They don't know that I know, she whispered. I think Khan has cameras in here. Her eyes were big and full of concern. It's not right how they exclude you from knowing about the message, and I hate that Khan makes a decision on your behalf. I agreed, my belly heavy with disappointment. He wants to protect you from sacrificing yourself, but he should speak to you about it, not his friends. Did the council give Khan an ultimatum? Yes, heavy sanctions if you're not returned, but he's not willing to let you go. I nodded, my mind analyzing the situation. We knew this was a possibility and a worst-case scenario. I'll need to convince the council that I'm here by my own free choice or millions will suffer. But how are you going to do that? I'm forced to go back and speak to the council. You can fly Boulder's drone, right? Christina nodded. Good. Give me 5 minutes and meet me downstairs. Okay. Christina and I both knew that the collective came before an individual. I couldn't let people suffer because of me. And sanctions would hit the Northlands hard. It would only give people like Edward fuel to use against Khan, and it would mean that the school project didn't get a chance to succeed. I got out of bed to dress, and when Christina left, I contacted my mother again. My voice was cool and clipped when I spoke to her. Your demands have been heard, I said, but I have my own demands. I want a guarantee that I can return to the Northlands when I've spoken to the council. I can't give you that, she said with a look of pity, and I knew she truly thought I had been brainwashed and that she needed to protect me from myself. Khan is prepared to face the sanctions, but I'll come back and speak my case if you guarantee that the school project will have your full support. Isabel gave a tiny nod. As long as Kaya and the children are safe, and you understand that you won't be allowed to go back for inspections. I pressed my lips together in a fine line. We'll rely on Kaya and Christina to give us updates, Isabel said softly. Oh, I will come back here, I said determinedly. And if you were truly as evolved and open-minded as you claim to be, you would embrace the idea that something here must be special for me to feel that way. Honey, she reached a hand out to me, but I took a step back. You've preached about tolerance and enlightenment my entire life, and now I see that it all was just words. That's not true. Her hands dropped down beside her. Then where is your tolerance now? Why is it that you're not curious to meet the man that makes me happy? He's the ruler of the Northlands, she said as if that was explanation enough. If you think you're any better than him, then I want you to consider what you're doing right now. You're using your power to control and ruin other people's lives, the very thing you're accusing him of. You have a right to feel that way, she said in that oh-so-mature way that suddenly made me resent her. And the worst part is, I said, that you think this will bring me back to you, and the truth is that you just pushed me away. I'm not pushing you away. I'm doing what any mother would do to protect her child. I'm not a child. This time I was sneering. I'm a grown woman with free will, and you're imposing your fears and ill-informed judgments on me. Clearly you have changed, my mother said. Clearly I have. It's called personal growth, and you should try it. I ended the call without any polite wishes of peace. In the Northlands, a person was allowed to be angry, and I was seriously pissed off at both my mom, the council, and Khan for making decisions on my behalf. Kaya's words about my being a warrior came back to me again. She was right. I had fought battles using words and reason my whole life, trained to think strategically, and put my ego aside for the sake of fairness for all. But this time I was fueled by something else. This time I was going to battle against every ruler in the world, defending my right to make my own choices. I would play the council's game and go back to face them to avoid the sanctions, but when I opened my mouth to speak, I would be speaking for only one person. Me.
Chapter 21 The Ruler's Nightmare. Khan. It was almost 10 o'clock when I walked back to our suite. After turning my options over with my closest group of friends, my mission was clear. I would pretend that I hadn't received word from the council because I didn't want Pearl to feel guilty about choosing us over our countries. I would also make sure that we were married within the next 24 hours, since the idea that someone or something could get between us scared me. Maybe then the council would see that Pearl and I were serious about each other. Opening the door, I was surprised to see the room empty. Pearl wasn't in the bathroom either, so I called her but got no reply. "Boulder," I said when I met him on my way to the garden, "did you see Pearl?" "No, I'm looking for Christina." "All right, they probably went for a walk," I guessed, and with a hand shielding the morning sun, I walked out on the large patio and scouted around the large park to search for them. Magni came out, chewing on an apple. "Any of you pussies up for some sparring?" he asked. "We're looking for Pearl and Christina," I told him with annoyance in my voice. "Have you seen them?" "Nope." He turned back and shouted over his shoulder, "Hey, Finn, come out here." Finn came out carrying a plate of food with his mouth stuffed. "What?" he mumbled, and stopped when he saw Boulder. "Didn't you just leave?" Finn pointed a thumb over his shoulder. "No," Boulder said, and then his face scrunched up into a mask of horror. "Fuck." Boulder pushed Finn out of the way, making him lose his plate, and I followed right behind, seeing Boulder sprint through the house and out the front entrance to the courtyard. "Fuck, fuck, fuck," he shouted, and picked up a stone, throwing it as far as he could. "What's wrong?" Finn asked behind me, but I saw it right away. "Your hybrid." "Call it back," Magni ordered from the entrance, and Boulder tried before he stomped his foot and roared out his anger, "It's on manual!" Magni ran down the 3 steps and pushed into Boulder's personal space. "How does a momsie know how to fly your hybrid?" "Because he taught Christina," I said bitterly, remembering Boulder's confession to bartering with Christina. "You fucking moron," Magni pushed Boulder back. Finn started laughing. "Boulder, my friend, I swear somewhere a village is missing their idiot." "Fuck you," Boulder sneered at them both and pushed his hands through his hair. "Let's go," I said, and ran to Magni's sleek red drone, which was as fast as Boulder's. "Maybe we can catch up to them." They all followed, and Magni had us in the air before Finn had even closed his door. "Christina isn't aggressive in her flying. She won't go fast," Boulder assured us, and held on when Magni pushed the accelerator button to the max. "Come on, come on," I chanted in my mind, willing Boulder's black drone to slow down so we could catch it. "Why would Pearl do something this shitty? Why not talk to me?" The border was only around 20 minutes from the Grey Manor at high speed, and after 10 tense minutes, a black dot became visible in the horizon. "I see them," Magni muttered through gritted teeth, and we all zoomed in on the small dot in the distance. "Told you she wasn't a fast pilot," Boulder said, and sounded relieved. "Why are they changing direction?" I asked when the black dot took a swing to the left. "Maybe they spotted us?" Finn suggested. "Can't this thing go any faster?"
"I'm going more than 200 miles an hour," Magni shot back. "If you want to go faster, we have to go higher."
"It's fine, we're almost there," I said, with my heart hammering fast. I'd been so fucking close to losing Pearl and suffering the same fate as Magni. She and I had some serious talking to do.
"Wait, is that even your drone?" Finn asked Boulder.
Complete silence filled the cabin as we came close enough to see that the black drone wasn't Boulder's. Without a word, Magni pulled his drone back in the direction of the border and lifted it higher to accelerate. We remained quiet and tense until we arrived at the border and spotted Boulder's drone parked on the hilltop less than 200 feet from the wall. I jumped out and ran to the black drone as soon as I could, my eyes searching for Pearl, but finding no one. The drone was empty, and Boulder roared out at the same time I sank down in a squat, feeling 1,000 pounds weigh down on my shoulders. Shit. Boulder was hammering his hands down on his drone with his face twisted in pain. This isn't fucking happening again. I couldn't help him even if I wanted to. My insides were cramping up, making me feel like vomiting, and with a hateful glance I looked at the border between me and Pearl. She had sacrificed herself, again, but what she failed to understand was that there was no herself anymore. We were bonded, and the greatest pain was to be torn apart. She hadn't sacrificed just her happiness, but mine, too. Finn stood quietly with a hand on Boulder's shoulder and a despondent expression on his face. "I'm sorry, man," he muttered. "That's so twisted, even I can't think of anything funny to say." Boulder kept his head down while I looked away, falling from my squat down on my ass and just sitting there, with eyes not focusing on anything. Empty. I felt fucking empty, like the best part of me had just been ripped out through my throat and left me hollow, sore, and speechless. "Hey, are you okay?" I heard Magni's question, but mentally I'd retreated to my inner room, where I was crawling on the walls, clawing at old wounds to keep my focus on anger instead of heartbreak. "You think anyone will follow you? You're so small you're the last one to know when it rains." My father's hoarse laughter centered me, and the pain from my childhood spread over me again. "You might be my oldest son, but Magni is my pride. Look at my boy. Now that's what I call a real man." "Hey, Khan, talk to me, man." Magni was snapping his fingers in front of me, and I blinked a few times to get my vision to clear, from blurred to sharp, and pushed him away. "I'm fine," I lied, and pushed off from the ground to see Boulder still leaning against his drone with his forehead resting on it.
"Boulder."
I froze at the sound of a female voice, and lifted my eyes to see Christina standing by a group of small needle trees behind him. My eyes immediately searched for Pearl, but Christina was alone. Boulder looked at me, silently asking me if I had heard it too. I could tell his eyes were red, and in that moment I hated him. All he had to do was turn his head to see his woman walking slowly toward him, while mine was out of my reach. "Christina!" His voice dripped with disbelief as he turned his body and faced Christina, who stood insecure and made herself small. She was scared of us,
and her fear was justified. Boulder ran to pick her up, and the two of them were torturing my eyeballs with their kissing and hugging, so I looked away, walking with sunken shoulders back to Magni's drone. Finn and Magni followed me and showed empathy by keeping their mouths shut as we left the two lovers to take Boulder's drone back. "Boulder just sent me a message," Finn said softly after we'd been flying back for about 10 minutes. "Pearl left a message to you with Christina. He's sending it to you right now." I nodded, keeping up the cool facade that I had practiced to perfection with my father. "Con, maybe..." Finn said when we arrived at the manor, but he was stopped by Magni, who placed a hand on his shoulder and muttered, "Let him go." Last time I had walked down the hall to my suite, I had naively thought I would be married to Pearl within 24 hours. Now, I doubted I would ever see her again. The council members weren't stupid. They knew Magni had kidnapped Athena, and that somewhere there was a breach in their border. They would make sure Pearl was secured and untraceable. I could attack them, but Pearl wouldn't approve, and we were outnumbered by far. The message. I slid to the floor and rested my back against my bed, bringing up the message that Boulder had forwarded from Christina. Pearl's face projected up in front of me. The sight of her serious blue eyes and long blonde hair made me swallow hard. I wanted to reach my hand behind her neck and pull her in for a kiss. I wanted her to be real and not a hologram projected by light in the air. "Con, I know the council made demands and that you discussed them with Magni, Finn, and Boulder. It's not their opinion you should worry about. It's mine." She smiled with sadness. "I understand that you want to protect me and us, but ultimately, the decision has to be mine. Christina will take me to the border, and if you love me at all, I ask that you forgive her. You would do the same for one of your friends, and I'll never forgive you if she is punished for helping me." She sighed and looked down. "This isn't a goodbye." Pearl choked up a little, but lifted her face again. "And I meant it when I said that I love you. I will come back, Con. That's my promise to you." The message ended, and silence filled the room again. The pressure in my chest made me feel like someone was blowing up a balloon in my insides, and my ribs were cracking. My father had been right. I had grown up to be a complete failure. My people were laughing at my brother because his wife had left him, and I hadn't been able to get her back. Now the woman I was supposed to marry was gone too, and it was all because the council in the Motherlands had me by the balls. No wonder rebels were stirring in the shadows when I was nothing but a fucking fool for thinking I could rule the world. My nose started running, and I dried it with the back of my hand, pulling my legs up and lowering my head. I can't even control the people around me. There are people who cry ugly, and I was one of them. The strain of holding back the humiliating tears that my father had hated so much and beaten out of me as a child made my face spasm like a desperate gatekeeper trying to hold back a crowd of emotions that wanted through. I fought hard, but more than 15 years of suppressed emotions wanted out, and in the end I rolled up in a fetal position on the floor and cried my eyes out like a fucking mumsy boy.
Chapter 22. Place of Reflection. Pearl. My mother stood silently by the door, observing me from a distance. I tilted my head and narrowed my eyes. "Are you afraid of me?" I asked, not hiding my sarcasm. "Do you think Con corrupted me and turned me into a violent person who might attack you?" "No," she said, but I didn't believe her. "Then maybe it's shame that keeps you from coming closer," I mocked, not caring that my improper communication wasn't helpful to my situation. "I'm shocked to see you this unbalanced," Isabel said with sadness. "You should be. You're to blame." Her brows drew close together. "Pearl, be reasonable." "Reasonable?" I could feel my nostrils flare in suppressed anger. I came back to explain myself to the council and you lock me up instead. How is that reasonable? It's for your own good. The staff here are very kind, and with meditation and time, you'll be back to seeing things clearly again. I stood up and moved closer to her. Did you think about what I told you? She wet her lips. It's painful to see you so emotional. Why, what's wrong with emotions? Nothing, as long as they're serving you, she said softly. Expressing anger isn't very constructive if you want to make a point. Are you sure about that? I asked with a sharp tone. What if my point is to make you understand that I'm severely angry? But anger doesn't benefit anyone. I disagree, I said and locked eyes with her. Anger isn't my ruler, Mom. It's my tool. Your tool? The strongest tool I have to fight injustice. I spread my arms, looking around in the room full of nice and soft furniture with no sharp edges to do self-harm. I'm angry that you brought me here. I'm angry that you think you know better than me, although you have limited knowledge of the N-Men. I'm angry that I have to leave the man I love and defend my actions to you. I'm angry that people I trusted and respected turned on me when my agenda no longer supported theirs. I narrowed my eyes. And you know how I use my anger? My mother's mouth was nothing but a thin line as she watched me. I use my anger as fuel, I said slowly. But maybe if you focused on something positive instead. I drew in a deep breath, stoking the fury in my chest. Pearl, darling, positive thoughts are much more constructive, and they make you feel better. Then why didn't you think positive thoughts when I told you I wanted to stay with Khan? There's nothing positive about that, my mother said, her words clipped. No? I pulled up my sleeves and squared my shoulders. I'll help you then. Tapping my finger on my chin, I started. Let's see. Isn't it positive that your daughter is happy? Or how about the fact that my relationship with the ruler of the Northlands gave hope that a Motlander could influence the N-Men to make positive changes? Isn't that positive? My mother remained silent. It's okay. I can see you need help thinking positive thoughts. I pressed on. How about the fact that the first inclusion project is now ready to start? To educate young N-boys to respect and value women as equals. When my mother still didn't speak, I lashed out. Looks to me like you're the one who needs to look at the positives instead of focusing on the negatives. I'll be back tomorrow, she said. Hopefully you'll be calmer then, and more yourself. I turned my back on her, but before she left, I looked over my shoulder and pressed out three words, low and pained. I trusted you. In my work, I had visited places of reflection before and spoken to the staff about the needs of people living there. Peace, tranquility, connectedness, nature, and guided meditations were the basis of places like this, and nobody left until they were deemed back in balance. Knowing full well how balance looked, I would have to swallow my emotions and channel my anger into smiles if I wanted out of here. A friendly staff member came in wearing a green jumpsuit and smiled at me with concern. May peace surround you, and welcome to Timeless Happy, she said. How are we doing today? We. I wanted to tell her there was no we, and that I knew her tricks for making me feel included. But it wasn't necessary. That I wasn't staying, and I didn't need her help. But saying those things aloud would be seen as negative and wouldn't serve me. May peace surround you too, I said, and walked over to take her hands. Imagining that the woman was Christina, I poured gratitude and warmth into my greeting with this stranger, and could see her smile grow bigger. Your mother expressed concern about you, she said, and I laughed, untroubled. It goes both ways. My mom is getting forgetful, and it's getting harder for her to stay open-minded about things she doesn't understand. She worries, like most parents. I chuckled. The problem is that when your mom is a council member, she tends to take things a bit too seriously. Ooh, I'm sorry to hear that. She empathetically rubbed my upper arm in a soothing manner. But a nice little breather in here does everyone good, you'll see. You're right. I'm just going to enjoy my day off and prepare for tomorrow. What happens tomorrow? She asked. I'm returning to my work in the council. I'm so glad to hear that you're in a positive state of mind. But just so you know, most people stay for at least a few weeks, and your mother seemed to think you needed a long break. My throat burned, but I managed to keep a calm and kind voice. Yes, I'm sure my mom gave you a different impression, but as I said, she worries, and she can be a little confused sometimes. I waved a hand dismissively. She means no harm. No, I'm sure she doesn't. Feel free to walk in the garden or meet up with some of the other guests. We have a singer here at the moment, and she likes to perform after dinner if you're interested. How lovely, I said, sugar sweet, and smiled until she left my room. Con had been right. After spending time with him, I saw everything differently, and the sweetness felt suffocating to me. Not that I preferred the men swearing, but there had to be a way to create a middle ground. A long break. It shouldn't have surprised me, since lots of people spent months in places of reflection. But I didn't belong here, and I needed to explain that to the council. If only they would listen. Chapter 23 Making a Point Pearl 7 days. I wasted 7 days pretending to be timeless happy before I was finally declared balanced enough to return to my own apartment. To get to that point, I had to show only positivity, and it sucked. I'm so happy you finally see that bringing you home was the right thing to do, Isabel told me when she came to bring me back to my own place. My endless hours of meditating had resulted in one good thing. I had forgiven her. My mother wasn't a bad person, nor was she as evolved as I had given her credit for. But my rants about her not being evolved for not accepting the N-Men were kind of hypocritical if I couldn't accept her in spite of her ignorance. Before you go in, she said when she dropped me off, I should tell you that it was a video that Christina sent to the council that made them want to see you today.
Oh?
The council had originally given you a leave of absence for 4 months to find yourself.
4 months?
My belly twisted at the thought of my spending one more day in that place. But seriously, 4 months?
Yes, I felt like you needed a longer break to process everything you've been through.
I nodded and opened the door, because if I spoke right now, something unpleasant would come out.
You have a few hours before the meeting. I'm joining from my office, but you can just do it from your room.
Her words were redundant. I already knew this and lifted my hand to wave goodbye before I closed the door and walked into my building, hardly noticing the gorgeous colors of the vertical garden on the facade. 4 months. My mom had been willing to let me waste 4 months in that place. I was shocked. My room felt small and strangely unfamiliar to me, as if I had outgrown my old life. But I didn't want to bike to my office downtown and face my staff. Instead, I read up on summaries from the last council meetings to see what had been said about me. Stockholm syndrome, brainwashed, loss of critical sense, corrupted, and self-destructive were a few of the words that made me pale. And then there was the summary from last night's meeting with a video report attached from Christina. I pressed play and sat back, watching Christina smile at the camera.
I've received your message that Kaya and I are now in charge of reporting about the school project, so let me update you.
She crooked a finger at the person filming and walked through her breathtaking house with all the beautiful details from before the toxic war.
First of all, Kaya has arrived, Christina said, and Kaya came into the frame and waved at the camera with a girl by her side. And this is the lovely Raven, who is our first student, but not the last, since the others are arriving next week.
Christina continued walking through the house until she came outside and placed her hand on Archer's shoulder.
This is Archer Rex, who is the best teacher in the Northlands and happy to help with the project.
Archer gave a charming smile to the camera and looked handsome with his clean shave.
And while we're doing presentations, I want to introduce you all to my soulmate and best friend, Alexander.
Boulder stood by his large drone, and Christina walked straight up to him and snaked her arm around his waist. He too had a clean shave, and his hair was short on the sides of his head. "Let us take you to see the school where the children will live and work," Christina said with a smile.
"It's not completely done yet,"
Boulder commented, and got in the hybrid. The video showed a bit of the area from above and gave a good impression of where the church was compared to Boulder's and Christina's house. They did a quick tour, and then Boulder pulled Christina under his arm again, planting a loving kiss on her head.
"I should thank your council for sending me the most amazing archaeologist in the world," he teased her.
"Yes, you should," she grinned. "And if you're listening, Pearl, then we want you to come back and finish all the great work you've started," Christina said to the camera.
"No, we don't," Boulder grinned. "Pearl, you can stay in the Motherlands. We finally have our ruler back to normal."
Archer laughed in the background.
"Thank God."
"Hey, that's not fair. Now the council thinks Pearl did something wrong," Christina scolded them.
"She did,"
Boulder said and wrinkled his nose.
"She made our ruler soft in the head."
"She didn't," Christina protested.
"She so did. You weren't there when she made him stop killing people who were scheming to overrun him, or the time she made a wealthy man adopt a whole village of poor men."
Archer and Boulder were shaking their heads.
"Tell the council to keep Pearl, because we were starting to wonder who was running our country, Khan or her."
"Pearl is a good person," Christina said firmly, "and I miss her." Boulder playfully placed a hand over her mouth and shook his head.
"No, keep Pearl. We're much happier with Raven," he said,
and picked the little girl up in his arms.
"At least Raven does as she's told."
The girl laughed and shook her head while placing her arms around his neck.
"No, I don't," she said.
"You don't?"
Boulder made a mock expression of shock.
"But I thought all little girls were easy to boss around,"
he joked.
"Nuh-uh."
Raven was grinning at him, and the two shared such a beautiful connection that it melted my heart.
"Okay, enough with you two." Kaya stepped in front of the camera.
"I just want to say that I'm so excited to be part of this historic experiment, and that I can't wait to get started. Christina and I will keep you posted, and if you have specific questions, just let us know and we're happy to answer." Kaya waved at the camera and ended the video. I leaned back and pressed out a huge sigh, grateful to have friends like them. It didn't escape me that none of the men had worn leather, and that both Boulder and Archer had looked unnaturally groomed for N-men. Yeah, definitely staged. But seeing that the council had summoned me for a talk today, it had worked. Reading the council's response to the video almost had me in tears. Statements like, "Those two N-men didn't look scary, and did you see how the child willingly let him pick her up in his arms? I saw no fear in her eyes either. Maybe we should have trusted Pearl. Sounds like Pearl was working miracles in the Northlands. I should like to hear Pearl explain more about making the ruler soft. Who votes to have her return to us?" Luckily, the vote had been in my favor. When the time was right, I accessed the council meeting through my secure line. Seats were filling up with members in their red cloaks, and even though it was virtual reality, it felt very real. A few shot me sideways glances, but even more of them smiled at me with a mix of pity or sympathy.
"Our first item on the agenda today,"
my mother, the chairwoman of the council, said,
"is to hear from Pearl what happened in the Northlands that led to her disturbing decision of refusing to come back, even when she was no longer a hostage."
My skin heated up from the burning feeling of 100 sets of eyes watching me closely. Clearing my throat, I stood up to speak. "I grew," I said shortly, and when their confusion showed, I elaborated. "I arrived at the Northlands frightened and full of prejudices about how awful, cruel, and primitive the men would be. But I quickly realized my fears were based on ignorance, and I grew to a new understanding of the world. I used the tolerance implanted in me from my work in the council to open my mind and see the beauty in the Northlands. And once I did, it was all around me."
"What is your relationship with Lord Khan?"
Leah asked. "He is my friend and someone I respect a great deal."
"And how does he see you?"
I thought about my answer. "He loves me and has asked me to marry him." I could feel the tension and how everyone was collectively holding their breath.
And have you accepted?
Yes, I have. Loud mutters broke out and the pity that shone at me from all sides weighed heavily. Council members were shaking their heads and holding hands to their chests in shock.
Christina has married Alexander, and as you saw in her video yesterday, she is very happy with him,
I pointed out, silencing the mutters.
And I promise you that she and I are not weak or obedient women.
I took a second to straighten my back and let my eyes slide around the room of women. Women have been in power for hundreds of years, and we have nurtured the earth back from the brink of destruction. I saw nods.
We all agree that it was awful how men dominated women and suppressed them by refusing to share power with them for thousands of years. But even before the toxic war, things started to change. Women were given the right to vote, to study, to be professionals, and to pursue their dreams.
More nods.
For centuries, we have held on to the belief that men are dangerous and should never be trusted with power.
No one disagreed. But I, for one, would like to acknowledge the millions of strong men who fought for equality alongside their mothers, sisters, wives, daughters, and friends. They were the courageous men who spoke up in halls where women didn't have a voice.
Maybe we have forgotten that equality never meant power for only women, I pointed out. It means an equal sharing of power between men and women.
I looked around and was grateful that they were listening to me.
How can we condemn the men of the past for oppressing women and depriving them of a voice when we have done the same to men for hundreds of years? And when did we become the oppressing gender? And how can we say that we're better than the men in power that came before us, when we too just want it our way?
Don't compare us to those awful men. They declared war on everything good and destroyed the world,
Patricia from the Orange Area said.
Yes, they did. And we picked up on that and declared war on men, I said calmly. We made masculinity a dirty word and raised our boys to be shameful of their gender. A few looked down, but I wasn't done talking.
The men in power had to be stopped. There can be no doubt about it. But I'm afraid that our war on men is as destructive to the human race as the toxic war was, albeit slower. The human race will be extinct if we don't find a cure for the infertility of our men. We've known for a long time that our men have low testosterone, and that many of them refuse to take injections for it. Why have we bullied our counterparts into resenting male hormones, into resenting what makes them special? How can we punish modern men for crimes committed by their forefathers? And how can we talk about balance when we've been overshadowing men for centuries?
Looks were exchanged, and a few mutters voiced. I am the only one in this room who has lived among the Anmen, and I say that we're missing out on some amazing men that carry their masculinity as a badge of honor.
But they mistreat women, Leah said.
I understand your fear. It has been planted in us with horror stories from childhood. But there are men on the other side of the border who are wonderful, brave, caring, loving, and funny.
But they hunt.
Yes, that's true. Our cultures are vastly different, and they have much to learn about how we live and vice versa. I'm not saying we can expect them to give up hunting or swearing anytime soon, but surely you can see that we have more influence through dialogue than judgment, I pointed out.
If you marry Lord Khan, you can't be on the council, Isabel pointed out.
You're right, but I am a Motlander at heart, and I'll make it my life mission to work toward a union between our nations based on mutual respect. It's naive to think these men could ever be like us. They are proud and crude, and their native language is profanity. But Christina and I have both experienced the magic of pure masculinity.
Their faces and gasps express their distaste.
I know you associate that word with greed, power, destruction, and death. But as I said, we forget that it was never the majority of men. Masculinity also means protectiveness, and the Enmen will die to keep their women safe.
Are you sure you're not confusing protectiveness with possessiveness?
I ignored that comment. This is the first time in history that there has been peace for 3 decades in the Northlands. Lord Khan is slowly lifting his nation out of some dark centuries of fighting for dominance.
and now is the time to help peace take root. But how?
By showing him that there is hope.
Hope for what?
They long for women. Oh, Mother Nature, what a disturbing thought, Jolina exclaimed.
You say that because you have never known the love of a man, but we know from the past that there are plenty of women among us who long for men, too.
What is she speaking about?
A young member asked.
I'm speaking about the forbidden books.
What books? The young council member asked again. More than 200 years ago, a woman wrote a series of romance novels about N-men that made them sound like amazing, virile heroes, and it made women from all over the Motherlands want to enter the Northlands to find a partner.
It was all fiction, my mother said. Nothing but lies.
Yes, so we've been told. But now that I've lived there, I can testify that it was never just lies. Her imagination was close to the truth. Naomi Gray from the Purple Area spoke up.
What are you suggesting? It's not like we can tear down the wall and have them join us. They would violate our rules and laws without even realizing it, and our people would be terrified.
And we can't allow our modern women to be auctioned off in their barbaric tournaments either,
Isabel said. I agree. I smiled softly. I think we should take one step at a time. First, I would like the council's blessing to join Lord Khan and help him lift his people into a stable, peaceful existence. It is my mission to educate them and steer them toward a democracy rather than a dictatorship. Mutters and nods made me optimistic that the majority of the council could see the logic behind this.
We should vote, Councilwoman Leah suggested.
My heart hammered like a drum when they voted, and I smiled when 87% supported me. Fueled by victory, I grew greedy and wanted more.
Thank you, I nodded my head. I will make you proud, and I'll ask that you'll openly acknowledge that I have chosen to marry the ruler of the Northlands of my own free will, and with the support of the Council. I would like all Motlanders to know that this gives hope of a future union based on friendship and respect. Christina's and Boulder's marriage should be mentioned, too.
But it's illegal to speak of the N-men, someone pointed out.
So change that, I challenged.
It's insulting to our neighbors in the North, and harmful if we want to break down barriers between us. Before anyone could object, I continued. Now, the second thing is that in case our stories inspire women who are curious, then a solution might be to allow a few men and women to meet each other on safe grounds.
Safe grounds? Are you talking about allowing N-men to enter the Motherlands?
Naomi asked. Yes, a few selected ones that are open to learning about our culture, and being a type of ambassador to represent their people. It's time to demystify the N-men, and the best way is for Motlanders to meet them in person. A handful of selected men could be allowed to visit and work to educate our people. Meeting a friendly N-man and seeing that they're human beings and not monsters will ease a lot of people's fears.
And if they kidnap again?
They won't. I'll personally select the men that I trust to behave. But, I raised a hand, they will come and go as free men, and they can't get in trouble for improper communication. It's simply how they speak.
I think we all need time to reflect on what you have told us today. You're asking us to take a huge leap of faith in you.
Juliana Hernandez, one of the senior members, concluded. I understand, and I thank you for your great open-mindedness. May peace be with you all. Pearl. Councilwoman Leah stood up as I sat down. Before we make our vote on making it legal to speak of the N-men, I would like to thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Given the Council's vote on your request to move to the Northlands and marry Lord Khan, you shall no longer serve on this Council. We thank you for your service, dedication, and not least for your bravery when you saved Athena. That shall not be forgotten, and I suspect we shall have the pleasure of seeing you again as a representative for the Northlands. I nodded my head respectfully and smiled, feeling high on adrenaline and my triumph. With rhetoric as my sword and logic as my shield, I had fought my battle and won. It was time to go back and claim my prize. But not until I got a few details sorted out. Chapter 24. Claiming My Prize. Pearl. So what did you vote? I asked my mother when I met her outside my apartment only half an hour after the council meeting.
I could see her eyes were red-rimmed, and knew she had been crying.
"Don't go back to him," she said, clearly heartbroken. "If you do, I'll never see you again."
"Why not? Am I not allowed back to visit you?"
"Yes, of course."
"Then I will." Isabel looked down. Her slim figure that I'd always seen as strong suddenly seemed frail. "I would invite you to my wedding, but with your distaste for the Enmen, I understand if you don't want to come." Her forehead furrowed.
"Are you sure you would want me there?"
"Mom." I tilted my head. "Of course I want you there."
"But you know I voted no," she admitted.
"Yes, I suspected that much." I gave her a sad smile. "But I also know that you did it because you care for me."
"I love you," she said.
"And I love you. But you broke your oath today in that meeting. You put your own personal needs first and used your power for your personal gain." She looked down. "If you decide to come to my wedding, you'll need to bring an open mind. Khan isn't stealing me away from you or the Council. He's sharing himself and everything he has with me."
"I would like to meet him."
I searched her eyes to be sure she meant it.
"I'll behave," she said quietly,
and it made me chuckle. "See, that's the good thing about the Enmen. You don't need to behave. If you're mad at Khan and want to let him know, you can. He can handle it."
"So I can tell him he's being a pirate and stealing my greatest treasure."
She flushed red from the highly insulting expression, and my laugh grew. "You'll have to think of something a lot worse than pirate if you want to make an impression. Tell him he's an asshat."
"Pearl!"
she exclaimed in shock, and looked around. "But don't give him your honest opinion unless you're ready to hear his in return," I warned.
"When will the wedding be?"
she asked. "Soon."
"Will you call me on the secure line like you used to?"
"Yes, Mom, I will. And you can call me too."
"Maybe I could see the school project."
"Of course." I brought her in for a hug. "It's going to be fine. You'll see." Her eyes were wet, and her shoulders sunken, but I had to trust that she would learn to accept my choice eventually. It took me 4 hours to get ready, and in that time I'd picked out my favorite foods to bring, gathered some practical things, and had been by my office to tell them all goodbye in person. Some of my staff I'd worked with for 7 years, and it was an emotional goodbye. Like I had predicted, they didn't understand my choice either. I made sure a message was sent to Khan from my office informing him to pick up a message from the Council at the border later that evening. He would think the message was from the Council, and he would probably send one of his guards, but it was okay. I just needed a ride back so I could surprise him in person. When the press release came out, I read it 4 times and nodded, satisfied. I had supplied the picture of me and Khan, and although it was far from a formal picture, it served its purpose perfectly.
Khan. "Want a spar?" Finn asked from the door to my office. "No," I said, with my eyes fixed on the chessboard.
"You sure?"
"Yes."
"Okay. You want to go to a bar and get drunk or something?"
I snorted at his lame joke. I couldn't go to a bar and just enjoy a night with strangers. I would always be their ruler, and in many ways it was a position of isolation.
"You okay?"
Finn asked, and moved closer. "Uh-huh," I grunted, without looking up, allowing no one to see the state I was truly in. My inner walls were red with claw marks, every old wound torn up to keep me focused and cold. I suffered behind a facade of indifference, but it was either that or breaking down and letting my men see what a fucking mess I was. "It's been a week," Finn muttered, but still got no reaction from me. "You've hardly spoken to anyone." I moved a bishop. "Do me a favor," I said. "The Council is sending a message. Bring it back from the border."
"Now?"
"Yes, they said 8 p.m.
"Okay, I can do that."
"Good." Finn left, and I moved in my seat. My hands might be moving chess pieces, but my mind was thinking about the message from the Council.
Was it a message about Pearl or the school project? Every day since she'd left, I'd been waiting for the other shoe to drop. My fear was of receiving a video from Pearl telling me that she no longer loved me and that it had all been a mistake. If everyone else in the council was as strong in the art of persuasion as she was, she would be outnumbered and brainwashed by them to see me as wrong for her. And maybe they were right. Maybe I was wrong for her. Pearl was light, and I was darkness. She was courageous and strong, while I was nothing but an impostor and a fraud that had shamed my father from birth. Clawing at my inner walls again, I tore at old memories to hold me focused. "You're too fucking emotional," my father's voice boomed in my head. My face hardened at the memory of being only 6 years old and receiving my first hunting knife as a present. It had been the happiest day of my life, and feeling like a big boy, I'd gone with my father when he wanted me to learn my first lesson in hunting. "I'm going to teach you to be a great ruler," my father told me, and whistled for our pack of dogs. 4 tail-swinging Labradors came running to get an ear scratch. "Which one is your favorite?" he asked, and innocently I'd pointed to Toby, who came to lick my hand. Toby and I had grown up together, and I considered him my best friend. His fur was a beautiful black color, and he always sensed when I was sad and needed him. Toby didn't have words, but his warm brown eyes expressed concern, love, and joy just as well. "Let's go," my father walked, and I followed with my new knife in my hand, and Toby following my every step. Next thing I remember, we were outside in the courtyard, Toby pressing against my leg, afraid of my father, who was yelling at him, "Get over here, you filthy dog!" With his head and tail low, Toby crept toward my father, looking back at me with fear in his eyes. I wanted to help my friend, but I was little and my father never listened to me. With my heart racing and my hands trembling in fear, I watched as my father grabbed Toby's neck and twisted his head up. "First lesson in hunting," my father said. "You need to be able to kill." He hissed out the last word with drops of spit spraying from his mouth. I blinked in confusion. Surely he didn't want me to kill Toby. "Get the fuck over here and cut his throat!" I shook my head, afraid of my father and terrified for Toby. "This isn't just about hunting, son. This is about teaching you how to become a ruthless ruler one day. If you can't kill a fucking dog, how are you gonna kill one of your closest men if he betrays you?" My eyes darted between my father and Toby, and I started shaking uncontrollably. "No," I whispered. My legs wouldn't move, and my chest heaved as I hyperventilated. "I said cut his fucking throat," my father yelled, but all I could hear was the scared whimpers coming from Toby. With a strong grip on my beloved dog, my father kinged me and clamped down on my right wrist holding the large hunting knife. "Stick it in and cut his throat," he demanded with irritation. "He's just a filthy animal." When I stood, frozen in fear, my father took my hand and stabbed the knife into Toby, who howled in pain. A loud sob erupted from me, and tears blinded me from the confusion and terror I saw in my best friend's eyes. "What the fuck?" The knife fell to the ground when my father pushed me away. "You little faggot, did you just..." He let go of Toby, who fell to the ground with a whimper, and then he came to tower over me. "You're such a fucking disappointment, look at you!" He was pointing to my pants, but I didn't have to look down to know I had wet myself. "I should call you Sappo," he snorted, and leaned close to my face, his breath warm and with a hint of tobacco. "You know, short for disappointment." My inner walls were dripping with blood from all the hurtful things I'd remembered to keep me from breaking. I'd survived my father's constant rejections, and I would survive Pearl's rejection, too. Perversely enough, his harsh words had become the anchor that kept me grounded under pressure, and the pain of losing Pearl would only put layers on my cold facade and make me more ruthless. What ruler needed a soft core anyway? My father sure as hell hadn't had a soft molecule in his body. Another memory flashed in my mind's eye. I was older, eager to be a man at 17. "Are you gonna be a wuss, sapo, letting your little brother beat you?" My father's condescending laugh ground on my pride, and I scowled at Magni, who was a bit taller than me now, and quickly becoming stronger. We circled each other, and I tried to block out our father's presence, which hung in the air like dark tar, making it hard to breathe and think. Magni attacked me, and because I was distracted, or maybe due to his impossible speed, he knocked me on my ass, twisting my body in a death grip and holding me down. "That's my boy. Show that girl how a real man fights." My father cheered him on, and when Magni let go and leaped to his feet, he received more praise and pats on his shoulder. "Wanna go again?" Magni grinned at me with his blue eyes glowing. 13, and he was almost as well muscled as me. I was 17 and should have been able to take him down, but things had changed. "No." I shook my head, my body too sore from endless hours of training, and my jaw too tense to say more than one word. Pushing up from the floor, I swept my dark hair back and walked away to the sound of my father and Magni laughing together. By the door, I glanced back, seeing the blonde ruler tousling his blonde son's hair with a look of sheer pride that felt like a thousand knives stabbing at my heart. My inner walls were dripping red, and I sat deep in thought when Finn returned half an hour later. My body felt heavy, like concrete, and I couldn't get up from my chair. My mouth turned downward, my nostrils were distended from the emotional stress inside me, and I felt a headache brewing just behind my eyes. "There wasn't a message, but a messenger," Finn said, and looked as happy as ever. "Can I send her in?" Not really hearing his words, I gave a curt nod and looked down, summoning my strength.
"May peace surround you."
My head shot up from the sound of the sweetest voice in the world, and there she was. Pearl stood in the doorway, radiant and smiling.
"Pearl,"
I whispered, and blinked as if to make sure my eyes didn't deceive me. She closed the door and spoke softly.
"I bring a message to you from the Council."
"What?" I cleared my throat. "How did you manage to come back?"
"I made you a promise, didn't I?"
While talking, she walked toward me, and I moved my chair back from my desk and pulled her down on my lap. Ah, the scent of Pearl and the feeling of her soft skin against mine. I held her tight to me, burying my face against her neck, unable to speak.
"I thought you would want to see this article."
She lifted her wrist and projected an article with a picture of her and me. I remembered her taking that photo on the day we'd interviewed Archer for the job as a mentor. She had told me we were making history and that she wanted to document it, and I had indulged her and smiled for the camera with an arm around her shoulder. "Historic day for the world," the headline said. My eyes flew over the text. "This article is approved by the Council, which wishes to announce that as of today, speaking of the N-Men is no longer considered a crime. Pearl Pelody, member of the Council and daughter of senior Council member and chairwoman Isabel Pelody, will be moving to the Northlands, where she will work with the N-Men on cultural projects to strengthen the relationship between our nations. Pearl has already spent the last months in the Northlands, and during that time, she has established a strong connection with the ruler of the Northlands, Con Aurelius. Christina Sanders, archaeologist and professor in history from New Berkeley University, was the first to go to the Northlands back in May, when the ruler requested help with an archaeological excavation. Christina has since chosen to marry Alexander Boulder, whom she calls her best friend. Likewise, Pearl will also be marrying Con Aurelius, as is tradition in the Northlands. Both Christina and Pearl emphasize that their marriages will be based on mutual respect and love.